All right. Well, so we live in some very interesting times, and we are hopefully on the other side of some of that. And I just really want to talk this morning about how, in all of that, what is our hope and what is our response? Because, you know, someone once said that there are only two guarantees in life, death and taxes, right? But the other guarantee is God's faithfulness in all that. And I really want to talk about how God is faithful. And so if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Isaiah chapter 40. And Isaiah chapter 40, Isaiah was what you would call a post-exilic prophet. So he was a prophet who lived during the post-exile times, when Israel had been carried off because of their disobedience. And so Isaiah is writing this particular passage as a comfort to people who had lost their homes, they had lost their families, they had lost where they lived, they had lost their income, they had been carried off, they were in a foreign land, they were in bondage and in slavery. And Isaiah is speaking to them. And so when we read in Isaiah 40, we read verse chapter 1, it says, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is ended and her iniquity is pardoned, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice cries, 'In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. For every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill made low, and the uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places plain.'" And so here's this promise that despite the chaotic events that had taken place among the people in Israel, here is this promise that God says, "I'm putting everything right. At some point, when the Lord comes, everything will be put back as it should have been, so that every valley, anyone, anything that feels lower than what it should, will be lifted up. And anything that is higher than what it should be, that thinks it's higher than what it should be, will be made low. And the uneven ground, the uncertainty, the difficulty in life, as you try to navigate where you might slip or trip or fumble, that will be made smooth. The plains will be made smooth." So he goes on to say, the rough place is plain. And so I want to say to you that regardless of what happens in this world, that for those of us who persevere, who remain faithful, even when things are difficult and certainly uncertain, when we live faithfully through that and punch our way through that out of obedience, that the end is God will put everything right. And that this world that we live in now, so it seems like these last 3 months have been interminable, like they've gone on forever. And I know that we have 4 or 5 people in our church who own their own businesses. And it's just been a huge challenge. There are people here who have been furloughed. There have been people who have lost their jobs. And it may seem like this is going to go on forever. And how will we ever overcome all that? We will. And as we do faithfully, remember, this right here is just a blink of an eye. That what we live for ultimately is this eternal thing that God promises to us when all of this is put right. So we have to be careful. We have to keep things in perspective. That all of this stuff can seem like it's way up in front of our face. But the reality is, when we leave this world and we go on to the next, what we have experienced here will seem almost as if it never happened. It will be so short. its impact will be so shallow in comparison to the heaviness, the weightiness, the beauty, the glory of heaven itself, where God puts all things right. So that's the longitudinal thing. That's as we look down the road in this life and what is ultimately ours in the next. So I want to talk about God's comfort during times of uncertainty and chaos, and maybe what our response can be in that. Because if you're like me, I'm not sure all the chaos is over yet. We live in really zany times. So far, there have been 2 million confirmed COVID cases in our country, a little over, and 117,000 people who have died from it officially, although they're going to probably drop that number significantly once they do some additional testing. The economic cost of COVID in this country alone was $7 trillion. That's the estimate. That's a lot of money. And it's not done. It's exactly right. $7 trillion is the economic cost. And you think, it's just economics, you know? Oh, no. That's people's lives. Those are jobs. That's the ability to put food on the table and to maintain your home and to make your car payment or your mortgage payment. That's what all that is. It's estimated that between 20 and 40% of the small businesses in our country go away. That's devastating. We all know people who own small businesses. And we know how hard they work at what they do. And that we know that literally, and when I say literally, actually, they have bled and they have sweated to try to keep that business going. And so for them and for us, life can seem to be pretty uncertain and pretty chaotic. We have the unseemly politicization of the pandemic itself. It's unseemly that you would try to capitalize on the misery of people who have suffered and died so that you can make political points. It's unseemly to do that. But we live in these kinds of times. We've all witnessed or seen or heard about the gruesome killing of George Floyd. And by any metric, regardless of what his past was or the kind of person he was or whatever, what happened to him was as inhumane as anything that I have seen in my lifetime. But out of that came violent protests and looting in over 150 cities. Entire cores, centers of metropolitan centers have been hollowed out by the looting and the violence that's taken place. We have never seen anything like this in our lifetime. And so many of us feel this uncertainty, like what's going to happen next, right? We all hear these conversations of people who are afraid. In those cities, entire African-American communities have been destroyed. African-American small business owners have lost their businesses for forever, many of them. I watched a video of an elderly African-American woman in tears as she was being interviewed who said, I have no place to go. I can't go any place to buy food. I don't have public transportation. I have no place to go to buy necessities. And so those people have been disaffected more than you and I ever would be. And so, I mean, we have this stuff going on. We have the rise. I mean, there has been, and we all sense this, we all feel this, right? There's been this tectonic shift of the seismic shift of the tectonic plates in our world today. Groups that never had much power now have more power than they ever had before. Radical groups. And so what is happening in Seattle is like beyond anything that any of us could have ever thought would have happened in our country. It's crazy. And that you actually have elected officials who approve it. It's crazy. And so the world that you and I grew up in, the world of order mostly, and law mostly, we're wondering what's going on. Will that happen to us? What do we do with that? We're also sort of on the sidelines watching probably what will be the most bitter and contentious presidential election in the history of our nation. What's going to happen from that? What do we do? And to top everything off, we had a very warm winter and a very cold summer. So, you just wonder where all this is going, don't you, huh? And so I share all this with you, not to say, not to get us depressed or discouraged, but to say, this is the life that we are living in right now. And we're wondering as people of faith, what do we do with this, right? Aren't you asking that question? I'm asking that question. How do we live faithfully in all of that? Where is God? And what should I be doing in relationship to God in that regard? So we read here in the book of Matthew where Jesus said, "And at that time, Jesus declared, 'I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and understanding and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for such was your gracious will. All things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal him.'" And then he says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavily laden, who feel the oppression and depression of the world around them, and I will give you rest." So the promise of God to us is that when we feel this stuff pressing in on us, his promise to us is that he will give us rest. So one of the things that I do in my life that many of you know that I do, but I'll share again, is that I'm a walker. And I take long walks, usually once, if not twice a day. I live out in the country, and I live in a great walking place. And so when I walk, like tonight when I do, and the sky is clear, and you see the stars out in the country different than you see them here, and you feel the breeze, and you hear the mockingbirds sing at night, and God begins to speak. And I am a different person when I walk out that door than when I walk in that door, because I go to him and I lay my burdens on him and I ask him what, and I don't always get an answer, but I get peace. Does that make sense? I don't always get an answer, but I get peace by the time I come back. Yeah. And it's, you know, at that time, sometimes, you know, look, there have been people in our lives who have asked us a question, and to give them the answer at that time would be inappropriate, right? So, like, when a certain child at a certain age asks how babies are made, there's a certain answer that you can give and a certain answer you cannot give, right? It's inappropriate, okay, to say certain things. It's inappropriate for God to share what the answer is, because we are not in our place in life where that answer is what we need to hear. But what we do get is his peace. And at that time, that has to be good enough. That is his answer. And then when we are ready, and when he is ready, he gives us the peace that we need and that we desire. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." So look, the yoke that most of us carry is the yoke it's the worldly yoke. It's the worldly concerns. It's the worldly fears. That's what's wrapped around our neck and shoulders. And he's saying, in essence here, I want you to take that yoke off. And I want you to put my yoke on your shoulders. I want my purpose for you. I want my plan for you. I want my design for you to be your burden. It's God's plan that needs to be our burden. It's his design for our life that needs to be our burden. It's his purpose for our life that needs to be our burden. Does this make sense to you? And if we exchange that, then the world's yoke is unbearable. Because there are no solutions there that are lasting and that are eternal and that take who and what we are into consideration. I just posted on my Facebook this morning, I think I can remember the gist of it, but C.S. Lewis says how, we often consider what our purpose for our life is, but what really matters is God's purpose for our life. It's His design. And everybody here has been designed by God. You have a particular purpose to play. You fit in His overall plan for this world. And if we walk away from that, then the yoke of the world and walk away from that yoke and replace it with the yoke from the world, it's unbearable. And so whatever chaotic thing might be a part of our life, whatever fear or concern that we might have, we have to see it through the eyes of God's purpose and plan for our life and His faithfulness. That doesn't mean that we won't have to make sacrifices. That might not even mean that we may not have to suffer. But if we do have to make sacrifices and if we do have to suffer, then we do it with God helping us to do that and not bearing that by ourselves. Because He goes on to say, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And I just want to go back up to 29 again and say, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. I am like you," He says, "and you will find rest for your souls." So when I take that walk at night or in the morning and I come back and I have peace, I've discovered rest for my soul. Because sometimes, if I'm honest, it just becomes overwhelming in my life. And partially because I choose to do battle with some people on some of these issues. Because I think the truth matters. I think it matters. And I think that if you are a person for whom truth is important, especially godly truth, then you're going to have people who are going to be angry with you. Because we live in a culture where people want to believe what they want to believe, and they want you to affirm what they want to believe. And if you don't affirm what they want to believe, then they are offended by it. We live in that kind of world. But if you are a person for whom truth matters, and you choose to share that truth and to live that truth, you will offend people, and they will be angry at you, and that has to be okay. So, Jesus goes on to say, He says, "Look, no servant is greater than the master. If they hated me, they're going to hate you." And we have too many of us, too many Christians, who want to think they remain faithful to God while still at the same time placating the world. And I just want to say to you that the more chaotic life becomes and the more stable you are, the more people will perceive that you are living in the face of what is most important to them, in denial of what is most important to them. Does this make sense to you? The more stable you are, the more virtuous you choose to be, the more you live your life according to the truth, and you do not negotiate that, it will be increasingly more and more in stark contrast to the world in which we live, because the world is less and less of that, even as we try to be that faithfully to God. So what I wanted to actually spend most of my time on this morning with you was to talk about Elijah and his faithfulness during his chaotic time. So because of Ahab and because of Jezebel, because of the socio-political climate and the religious climate during his day, because of the kind of poor leadership that Ahab and Jezebel provided for Israel in terms of their worship of many different gods, Israel was judged, and they experienced a drought, and with drought, poverty, and with poverty, starvation. And Elijah came along and said, "Hey, this is happening because of what you're doing. And Ahab's response was, you're just a troublemaker, and it's because of what you're saying that we're experiencing this. You're at fault here, not me. And so Elijah was blamed for being the messenger, for telling them what was wrong. And so he was persecuted as a result of that. So it's a long story, but all I can tell you is that what Elijah eventually discovered was that it was his faith in God that allowed him to live with certainty during uncertain times. It was his faith in God that allowed him to prevail in such a way that it was that truth that he was saying that eventually caused Israel to convert back to God. You know, one of God's first ways in which he disciplines people is to give them exactly what they say they want. One of the first ways that God disciplines his people is to give them exactly what it is that they say they want. Because when they get all of that and he gets out of the way, and sometimes people like you and I get out of the way and people actually get what they want, they discover that's not what they thought it was. And it's usually very painful. So look, what I want to share with you this morning is that what is happening in the world can only be endured if we remain faithful in our relationship with Christ and we grow in that relationship. It can only be endured if we come together as a community and we support and encourage and love each other and that we are forgiving and we are tolerant and we bear one another in each other's burdens. And that we are committed to that in a very high degree. Because the world in which we live is divisive. It's always about dividing and conquering. We cannot do that. We will not do that. So I just want to say that whatever is happening in the world in which we live now, whatever uncertainty that you might have or fear, God is faithful. He is faithful to you. He is faithful to me. But even in that, whatever that chaos might be, God has something for you and me to learn in that chaos. Something to learn. So remember, some of you who've been reading my text, I've been saying, what testimonies do you have that you have learned during this pandemic? Something that's been a blessing to you that you would not have experienced had not the pandemic actually happened. I have quite a few. Do you? Can you look in your life and see how God grew you, how God could bless you even during that time? So remain faithful during times of uncertainty. Remain committed to God. Remain committed to each other, to one another. And we will take on these challenges as a community. There are a whole bunch of people out here who are lost. There are people in your neighborhoods who are lost. There are people that you work with who are lost. And the more faithful you and I are in their presence, the more stark who Jesus is regarded in contrast to what the world is trying to do. Let them see that starkness in you. That's the beginning of their repentance.